I'll be reading Lamentations chapter 3, verses 25 and 26. The Lord is good to those who hope is in him. To the one who seeks him, it is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord God.
Good morning. I need to ask for several volunteers. I would like all the men who are willing to read together chorally to please stand. We're going to do some choral reading, so I need some nice, strong, proud Christian voices this morning. And gentlemen, I'd like you to read these passages. I'll start them for you, but I want the congregation to hear your voice. The quiet
words of the wise are more heeded than the shouts of the ruler of fools. Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. The fruit of that righteousness will be peace, its effect will be quietness and confidence forever. Your beauty should not come from outward adornments, such as elaborate hairstyles and wearing of gold jewelry. Rather, it should be that for yourself, the unfading beauty of the gentle Christ spirit, which is a great work in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past put their hope on God, used to acquaint themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands.
Stay standing, guys. We've got another one here. But I put this one up here. I want to say this because we, the church, are the bride of Christ. Have a seat. Thank you, gentlemen. Today, this is what we're talking about. To be still and to know, as that passage goes on, and to know that I am God. What does that mean, to be still? And why is that important? I have to confess, this was, it happens once in a while. Sometimes I just don't seem to be coming up with ideas. And this was one of those weeks where, you know, I kind of have a regular routine where I want to be in the process of getting ready for today. And as long as I stick to that, I feel pretty confident about my preparation and my study. But I was behind that this week and I got worried about it. And I really put a lot of faith into what for me is a fact that as I open up myself, and I think any minister who stands behind the pulpit to teach God's people, that God directs us. He gives us direction as men of faith to know what it is that the family needs to hear. And I pray about that fervently. And it just wasn't happening this week. And then all of a sudden it did. And then I realized maybe what was part of the problem is that I wasn't taking the time to be still and to not just to know who is God, but to listen to what God needed me to hear. And so out of that comes this lesson. Now, the next part of this is, can you hear me now? That's not from the old Verizon commercial. Okay, let's just make that straight. But it does make the point about how important it is. And really, here's the lesson in a nutshell today. How important it is to be still and to listen to God. And the idea is often we can't hear God until we take the time to do that. And so I'd like to suggest to us, too, as I kind of give you the ending at the beginning here, that if you're struggling to know where you are with God, if you're struggling in regards to thinking about whether or not God is even working or active in your life, the problem may be is that you just haven't gotten quiet enough lately. You haven't gotten still so that God can have your attention and say to you what He needs to say. So with that in mind, let's jump into it. I really believe that we are afraid of the silence. It's plain and simple fact that we'd rather, at least this is true in my house, I grew up this way. Often when you come to my house, it's not as bad as it used to be, but this drives Kathy crazy. She doesn't even know what I'm going to say, and she's already rolling her eyes over there. Or maybe it's a hot flash, I'm not sure. But in the background, at our TV, there it is. She said it before I said it. I always have the TV on. Always. But rarely am I sitting down and watching it. Well, I probably am more than I need to, more than I have the time to. But I just grew up that way, too. We always had the TV going on and not even necessarily watching it, but just blaring often in the background to just fill the silence, if you will. Even in our everyday conversations, we try to avoid those moments of silence. In public speaking, for example, we vocalize pauses. You know what I'm talking about, the ums, like, you know, between points, You know, why do we do that? Well, sometimes and I think most of the time it certainly is a factor of being nervous, and lots of times speakers, and it's certainly true in my speaking as well, I'm not even aware that we're doing it. But the point is, often we're doing it because we're afraid of the silence, those dramatic pauses, as Garrison Keillor might put it, if you ever listen to him, the master of the dramatic pause. I want to try an experiment. And I need to trust you on this. I need to trust you to do a couple of things here. We're going to have a time of silence. We're going to shoot for a minute. Now, I've got to ask you to do a couple of things. No counting in your head. No looking at your watch or your cell phone or any other timing advice that you bring to time preachers at a service. I know you have them. I know. So you can't look at those. And I'm even going to stop talking during this time. I expected cheering, but I'll take amen. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about this moment of silence. And when you think, without trying to figure it out by counting or such, when you think a minute has gone by, just raise your hand. Okay, you got that? So no looking at the clock or anything. Ready? When a minute's up, raise your hand. Silence. Okay, that was about a minute. How did it feel? I don't know about you, but it was maybe a bit awkward. My fear is, you know, what were we thinking when that was going on? Weren't you thankful for the noise of the little ones? You know, I mean, it was hard. You know, we had a moment or two, but, you know, we love those sounds. I don't know if you're like me. I'm one of those people that has terrible ringing in the ears. And so in a quiet setting, that really becomes loud and I hate it. And it's terribly distracting. And so You know, so I got to experience a little bit of pain while we were doing this. Of course, it's painful for me not to talk, as you know. But I just want us to experience that. Moments of silence feel like eternities to us often, because we're so used to having noise in our lives. Somebody should be saying something. You know, when people make hospital visits or they're visiting, families when there's been a loss in the family, and sometimes we gather together and nothing's being said, that silence just kills us. And pardon me for saying this, but so often we say something stupid at those times that kind of ruins the moment. And we wish we wouldn't have said it. Silence was the perfect thing to say. Or maybe I should say experience at those times, because it gets me back to what I so frequently talk about, that ministry of presence, just being together. And I truly believe that the ministry of presence is often most effectively accomplished in silence. As so often we say, the silence was deafening. So why are we afraid of the silence? The irony of this is that silence is where we are most likely to hear God. And I want us to be reminded of that. You know, we frequently have talked, and I was kind of noting it today in our Bible study time this morning and in our worship service already, about the emphasis that we place upon talking to God, praying, for example. So very important. So absolutely very important in our relationship with God. But I want to suggest to us today that something that I think is equally important, and maybe in some cases more important, is being still before God, being silent before God, so that we can hear Him. Our lives are absolutely overflowing with noise. And here's my theory about this fear of silence. Most likely for us, silence means we aren't talking. And if we're not talking, that means we're probably not in control of things. Or at least we feel like we're not in control of things. And we're not comfortable with that. You know, they have names for people like that, and this is certainly me, control freaks. But I'd like to suggest to us this morning that I think in some way, to some degree, we are all control freaks. And when you think about that, look at it the opposite way. Do any of us like feeling like we're not in control, or that we're in situations where there is no control or we're out of control? We all want a hand in what's going on. We all want a hand in what's happening. And when we're quiet, when we create space in our lives for God to speak, we don't have the floor. And this feels strange to us because our world, modern America, is built around us being in control. So much control in our lives is put at our fingertips. We control what channels we watch, the exact temperature of our surroundings, the second it takes to nuke our dinners, the exact moment that the sprinklers come on to water our lawns. We can pay bills, order Christmas presents, and make plans for dinner, all with the click of a mouse. And with increasing technology, we are becoming more and more in control. Now, I want to say this. I don't mean to suggest that technology is bad. But I want us to realize there are some consequences. And not necessarily about technology per se, but about this illusion of control, or this desire to have absolute control in our lives. But as technology continues to improve and advances come and we get excited about it, You know, we have so much control of our cars and our houses and through medical advances in technology, our own bodies. We can take medicine to help us lose weight or to put on muscle, to grow hair and to get rid of wrinkles. The prediction is that if medical technologies continue and advances are made at the rate that they are made, it will be quite common for us to be 100+ years. Now, that is if we learn to start eating better than America is right now. We believe we have the ability to control everything. We believe we have the ability to will our world into existence. As I say up here on the screen, we believe that nothing is truly outside of our control. We create and live in a world that we want. To the finest detail, we can tailor almost every facet of our existence to our specifications. In a world we will into being, there's not much need for mystery because we believe nothing is outside of our control. We can protect our family from burglars and offensive music and mosquito bites. What color do you want your walls? What color do you want your hair? Do you want to know your neighbors, or should I put up a privacy fence and keep them out? How big do you want your TV to be? What temperature do you want your side of the car to be, or your side of the bed to be? We are in control. At least we think we're in control. But the reality is, the truth is, we aren't. We are not in control. We don't like to hear that, but we're not. And you need to hear that. And we need to believe it. And we need to act on it. And we need to understand the spiritual implications of that in regards to our relationship with our God, with our Savior, with the Holy Spirit, and with each other. In an article about the illusion of control, the author said, "Death always drives the fastest car." Let me illustrate that. In other words, no matter how luxurious your SUV with leather seats, DVD players, and heated cup holders is, you still have to wait when a funeral passes by, don't you? Death always drives the fastest car. Remember Sandy? How can you not? It's still on the news every time we turn it on. Just a very current reminder that we are not in control. Even when we were given days, when the residents of the area that was hit were given days to get ready, I'm still amazed that over 100 lives were lost. Why were they lost so often? Because they thought they were in control. They thought they could handle it. And now the stories we hear are devastating. Again, we're not in control. But we like to think that we are. So we design and insulate our lives to give us the illusion of control. We do this in order not to face the reality. It has been said that we spend a lot of time distracting ourselves in order to keep from thinking about the things that we don't want to think about, like doubt and discouragement and death. But even in our highly controlled world, we still get glimpses of larger truths. Has anybody ever heard of the a cappella group called the Bobs? I hadn't either, but they're a contemporary a cappella group. And I came across a verse of one of their songs that kind of illustrates this point, that every once in a while, even though we think we're in control, we are reminded that we're not. Let me share that with you. This is a song that they do about a gentleman who has, or at least almost has it all. And it goes like this. I'll just read it here. I got Persian rugs. I got exterminated bugs. I got a house that goes from over there to here. My basement's full of fine imported beer. But I got something in my ear. I got tubeless tires. I got phones without wires. I got a 100-year-old bonsai redwood tree. I've had successful arthroscopic surgery on his knee. But last Friday, a pigeon pooped on me. In other words, we can get an MBA from Harvard, have overachieving kids, drive cars that cost... Now, I want listen to this and think about it. Does this apply to you? Because I bet it does. We can have overachieving kids, drive cars that cost more than our first house, wear clothes that cost more than our first car. But when we walk our dog, we still have to carry a pooper scooper. We can try to trick ourselves into believing we're in control, but in the end, we're not. We're not in control. Now, if we want to go deeper spiritually, the first thing we have to do is relinquish our illusion of control and turn that over to God. In true spirituality, the first act is a decision not to act. I want us to go back. This was one of the passages that the gentleman read as we started the lesson today. Be still. What that literally means, to be still, and I've associated with being quiet as well because I think it often goes hand in hand here. But to be still literally means empty hands. To drop what you're doing, to stop what you're doing, and to realize that what you're doing doesn't matter. But what does matter is what God's doing. And the reality is, often God isn't doing in our life because we're trying to do it. And the psalmist is trying to make the point, until we stop it, God can't work in our lives like we want Him to. So again, in true spirituality, the first act is a decision not to act. And that goes against all that we believe. Shouldn't we be doing something for Jesus? I mean, we're always talking about that. And there's a certain aspect about that is absolutely right. There are things that we need to do for Jesus. And so we struggle with this. But the problem is we've got the order out of order. Before we do, we must be. To listen and wait for God. To make space for God. If you're taking notes, write that down right now. Make space for God. Because that, I think, is a key application. At first, again, this sounds scary. Listen, wait, make space. We're used to speaking, acting, and taking up space. What would it be like if we followed Jesus' example? Mark tells us that early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where He prayed. Go off alone. I don't know about you, but I don't like to be alone a lot. You see, when I'm with other people, I feel needed and loved and important. But when I'm alone, I'm reminded of just how small I am and how big God is. Of course, that's part of the lesson we need to learn at those moments. You see, the problem with being alone is that it's lonely. That's why I think our idea of getting away is just another part of the illusion. We know that we need to get away, but think about how we get away. We take a walk in the forest preserve, or we plan a weekend up in the Wisconsin Dells with a few other thousand people who are looking for some solitude. Can we really get away like Jesus did? I'd love to take the morning and get away and pray, but have you seen my honey-do list? I don't have time. Do you? Here's some good news for us. Quietness, being still, is more about the inside space than the outside space. Solitude begins with the practice of being still for a moment, for a minute, for 5 minutes. To rest from our pursuit of efficiency. Remember, empty hand. Be still. Stop doing what you're doing. Be still. And know that I am God and you're not. That's what the psalmist is telling us. All right. I'd like us to sing this song. Would you please stand? If you'd like to, you can grab the hymnal. This is number 108. But I think this is a hymn that we're all pretty familiar with. But notice up there the pauses that I put in. You're going to need to pay attention to the song leader so I can count those out, okay? This is Habakkuk 2 and verse 20, by the way, if you're not familiar with that.
The Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. Keep silence. Keep silence.
Expect God to talk to you in those moments of silence. This is actually a Buddhist saying, but I think it's worthy of sharing. Only speak if you can improve the silence. You know, I say it's a Buddhist saying, but I think God said it first. Is it possible to live a deeper spiritual life in the noisy life? Maybe, but I truly doubt it. And yet our lives are so full of noise, it's hard to imagine living any other way. The reality is that if we aren't intentional, there's that word, Jace, intentional. In other words, we have to make a point to do it. If we aren't intentional about building quietness and stillness into our lives, it's not going to happen on its own. Who do you think is the author of noise? I hope that's a rhetorical question for everybody. I don't think God is the author of noise. Not that He hasn't used noise effectively at times, but as a distraction, it's not God's creation. Invitation is going to be a little different today. If we are willing to try, if we are willing to be intentional about being still, about being quiet, about listening to God, the rewards can be amazing, and they truly will be. Our efforts will be rewarded. And here's some advice to think about as you try to apply today's lesson. In the morning or in the evening, whenever during the day you could find this time or make this time, remember we have to be intentional about it, take 5 minutes and refuse to turn on any noise-making devices, and that might include family members. The regular exercise of silence can flush our minds clean of unwanted noise. And it's rather simple. Just sit. Just be. Breathe. And listen. Give up your control. Be still. Look. The noise will still be waiting when you're done. I promise. But for those few moments, remind yourself who is really the Lord in your life. Be still and know that I am God and you are not. Let me share this passage with you. Psalm 37, beginning at verse 7. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret, it only leads to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. Verse 7 again. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for Him. The Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before Him. In silence, will you come to God today? Again, be silent, be still. First, listen for God. Right now, listen for God. Now, listen to God. What does He need you? What does He want you? What does He command you to do today? Now. Are you ready to be obedient to God? Do not let the noise in your head, do not let the noise in your heart keep you from being obedient to God. Be still and know that I am God. If you're ready to be obedient to God, please come forward. Dave?